Hello. Ah, now that I've got your attention, I'd like a quick word about how Cambridge 105 Radio is funded. Our job is to give a voice to those groups who may not otherwise be heard. That may be our support for local music or the charity of the month. You're wanting to know how you can help, aren't you? Well, you can support our advertisers. And when you use their services, say you heard about them on Cambridge 105 Radio. And you can make a donation. It all goes towards our upkeep. We're eco-friendly, but we do have a bit of an electricity bill. Visit cambridge105.co.uk and click on the donate button. And thank you for listening.
Hello, Black. Well, I probably will need a gin after talking to Alec Magilton today. He's in the studio with Mike Shalom. Mike Shalom from Cambridge Independent. I must say that. I think I got that wrong the last time I announced it. Got a telling off. But more importantly, the front page news on Wednesday's issue of Cambridge Independent is with Alex Magilton. Is that right?
Yeah, that'll do.
And, sorry, you went skiing recently, in fact, last week, and you went to India. Tell us a little bit about it, because in the part of the article it says it was the best day of my life, but I'm not so sure at the time it was actually the best day of your life. Can you just tell me, first of all, Alex, why did you choose to go skiing in Kashmir?
Yeah, of course. So skiing is brilliant wherever you go. Being in the mountains, the sport, the fresh air, fun times. But I do crave the adventure side of life as well. And just last year, I was actually mountain biking in the Atlas Mountains in Morocco. And another lad that was on the trip mentioned skiing in India. And as soon as I heard that you could ski in India, I thought, well, that's me. I've got to organise this trip. So looked into it just a little bit. I don't really go in for the research. So found out that it was possible. And then it took probably 3-4 months to find anyone else that was willing to go. For some strange reason, people weren't up for it. Found a couple that I know anyway that were interested in going to Asia, and everything linked up. So there we were. The plans were set to see what skiing in India was like and if it was even possible.
Now, there are five of you. Now, you are an experienced skier and mountaineer, so you had a little bit more confidence about taking on this little trip. I say little because it wasn't little at the end, was it? But the five of you that went, are you all from Cambridge or are you all from...
So on this day that we're going to talk about today, I actually only knew one other person before getting to India. We were staying in a kind of hostel type accommodation, very authentic Indian accommodation, very basic. And there was some other people that had been traveling, going to various destinations, and they'd wound up in this same place called Raj's Hut. And so there was a few of us from England. There's a couple that I went to meet called Josh and Lydia, and it was her brothers that were also had come from various countries and all met up there. And then the other two foreigners in our party was a guy from Denmark and a guy from America, who we'd just all wound up together and ended up going up the mountain together on that day.
So basically you ended up in Kashmir. And it says in the Cambridge Independent that you and a group of skiers got lost and ended up in the disputed border zone between India and Pakistan. Now, we'll bring Mike Shalom in here because you are friends and he's run this fantastic feature on the Cambridge Independent. What was your reaction when you found out about this story?
Well, I knew Alex already because I'm helping with a project called Jan Mayan 2021, which is a replication of the University of Cambridge's 1921 expedition to something like 200 miles north of Ireland, Iceland, right up in the Arctic Circle. So I knew he was going to Kashmir. Actually, I've been to Kashmir myself many, many moons ago.
Not as skiing, though.
And so I said, oh, look, make sure you go and stay in a houseboat on Dal Lake. And then he said, oh, yeah, I'll say, and we're Instagram chums. And he just sent me an Instagram message saying, look, I've got a story. What's your email? I sent him my email and out came this sort of like fantastical 8,000 words. But I mean, you know, the history of the area is, you know, like kind of enough to put a lot of people off.
Yeah.
Because there have been three wars in Kashmir since partition, and the current makeup of the state, it's 43% administered, I think, by India, 37% administered by Pakistan. Pakistan and 20% administered by China. So there's lots of potential for conflict that makes, you know, like North and South Korea look like a bit of a tea party.
So, Alex, just tell us about, so you this particular day, you went out skiing. What was your mission that day to literally have a long ski in a beautiful area?
Yeah, so this area is absolutely amazing. It's totally different to anywhere in Europe that one's likely to ski at. There's one gondola that takes you up to around 4,000 metres, and then you can hike beyond that to gain another 100, 150 metres, which you really feel the altitude at. And then from that point, you've got the one controlled area, which is avalanche controlled, that skis straight down into the village that you start at. Or you can hike a little further, ski a little further, and there's a whole other amount of bowls and snow fields and ridges that you can make your way down back to the village. So on this particular day, it was only actually my second day there, so I wasn't that familiar with the mountain. And in my mind, I thought we could go down a really inviting fresh snow gully, have a great time, put fresh lines in, and then curve back round to where we were staying. But what actually happened is we were blocked off by another mountain ridge, so we kept having to follow the gully, climb over small hills in knee to waist deep snow.
So you took your skis off to get over to another section?
Oh, this
many times.
We kept having to take them off, cross rivers, hike up little hills at
Alex,
the altitude.
Is this what you would normally do on a ski adventure? This is a sort of normal thing for you to do, is take your skis off, climb over, and then ski down. So it's not like a normal.
Skiing in Kashmir is definitely not normal, but it is for the adventure side of skiing. So anyone that skis, you know that the pistes are great fun, but it's always more exciting to go off-piste in the fresh powder and normally on a European ski resort just to link up other pistes and have a bit of powder time. Whereas in Gulmarg, in Kashmir, there isn't any pistes really. There's just one controlled area, as I say, which is avalanche controlled. And everything else is wild backcountry.
All right. So, okay. So you're finding your way through this area.
Yep. So I did know that we weren't on track to where we needed to go. But what can you do when we've started going down the mountain? You can't easily hike back up. So you might as well just carry on going down. And I just hoped that the ridge that was blocking our way would soon drop off and we'd be able to curl back round, find a road or so, and get a lift back to where we were staying. But as the hours passed, it soon became apparent that this wasn't happening, and instead we were just going further and further towards what ended up being the Pakistani border, the line of control, and this active war zone, basically.
And your first reactions when you came to the Pakistani border?
So we'd started our day at a normal time, 10 a.m. We'd only had a handful of snack bars on us. We'd already had to drink out of the stream and things to stock up on liquids. And it then became dark, and we were in sort of the bottom of this valley, so it wasn't a slope that we could ski down. I was on the snowboard, so just trudging through really deep snow, totally arduous, crossing rivers here and there, through woods, becoming dark. Our phones had just died because of the cold, and the battery just disappears. And into the night, we suddenly saw these lights on the hillside. And the lights on the hillside were our closest opportunity to someone being there. There was dogs barking and you could hear the distant sound of a generator. And at that time I thought, well, if we have to spend the night in the woods, it's probably unlikely that all of us will wake up in the morning because of the state of exhaustion and the bitter cold temperatures. So I thought, well, if there's a generator there, at least we could. There might be a little shed or a hut that we can hunker down in, spend the night, and then walk back to the town or walk down the mountain from there. But it did happen to be the army base, and the lights we were looking at and walking towards was this army base, which at the time we didn't know whether it was Indian or Pakistan, but either way, it wasn't the best situation to be in.
Because there was an incident that day, wasn't there? That's what they said, that they're four unfortunate. They had had some sort of a terrorist attack, hadn't they? And four soldiers had died that day.
Yeah, so unbeknown to us, obviously we knew it was a conflict area. The whole of Kashmir is actually blacklisted on the UK Foreign Office, so you can't get insurance and things for going there. But that's part of the draw for it. But
for some, Alex, let me just say that now. For some.
For some, perhaps, yeah.
Certainly cheaper. But,
yes.
So we knew it was a dangerous place. But this army base, as we walked up to it, we had no idea of their heightened security that day because of this terrorist attack that had happened at a different army base. There's army bases scattered around all the mountains because it's such a conflict zone. There's gunfire being exchanged every day, and just to show each side that they're there and ready to fight, basically.
You had one particular thing, though, in your pocket that I think saved the day, didn't it? Which was your passport.
Well, for some reason, these things happen, and you haven't. I didn't consciously think I need to be having my passport on me. Perhaps I thought it was a bit of a safer thing to have it on me rather than leave it in my room or so. But I did also have right in the back of my mind that a passport is a useful thing to have with you in case of, I guess, situations like this.
Mm.
So as we walked up to the fence and these lights and the dogs barking, Lydia actually had a Indian SIM card, and she had been trying to get signal to call back to the hostel that we'd been staying in for a few hours because it was dark. We knew they'd be worried. We needed to get in contact. And as we were walking towards the army base, the phone suddenly connected, and she was able to send a message back to our hostel saying, "We are alive, we're not injured, and we're walking towards this army base." And it just so happens that the guys were already in the police station back in the town. And at that exact moment, the police could call the army and say that there's five tourists lost in the area. And unbeknown to us, this meant that the order of shoot to kill anyone in the area, any suspected people, anyone that's not in the Indian army, was withdrawn and taken to anyone in the area is very suspicious, but hold your fire. And doing the figures, looking back over a few days and the guys that were taking the call, we realised that there was under 5 minutes between when we got to the fence of the army base and the call connecting. So we had a 5 minute window between being shot and not. So
wow.
It was extremely close, but when you're in the situation, you have no idea that these are the timings. It's once you put everything together and once you get told in hindsight that you realise what the situation was at that time and on that day.
And Alex, Mike was actually in the article, it said that you had this presence of mind, all of you, that you didn't panic, you just had to get on with it. You were quite similar in the sense that you had a state of mind that thought there's no point in panicking about it. And there was lots of things in the article, Mike, that really sprang to mind. Carrying the passport, obviously having the quick thinking of the SIM card. And also you took the memory card out of the GoPro. That was quick work.
Well, this was actually while we were on the base being kind of questioned, interrogated. I thought, I've got a day's worth of footage on my GoPro, I don't want to lose that. So I, in my pocket, took it out of the case, put the memory card somewhere else in a different pocket, put it all back together, because I just presumed that they'd be searching all our stuff. I had my big camera on me as well. I thought, okay, this is all getting lost, but if we get out alive, then the camera is the least of the worries. But if I could take the memory card back with me, then that would be a bonus.
And you also say that you had dinner at the officer's mess. So after a little bit of a confrontation and a very tense moment, which by all accounts, it sounds like there was a lot going on in the scenes behind you arriving at the camp, that you had dinner at the officer's mess.
Yeah,
that must have been amazing.
Well, this was actually quite a few hours later. So we're up on this mountainside at the outpost base, razor wire everywhere, really shabby. It was like a building site. These savage dogs running around, Gurkhas, or everyone armed. We had a few hours up there as they were communicating to various commanders in the Indian Army, and they held us for a start just on the dirt road, sitting cross-legged on the floor, and then they put us in this bunker for a couple of hours or so, and we were conveying information to other people, and they eventually drove us down the mountain. Took about an hour in the back of this army truck through various border gates and things like that, checkpoints, and we were right down the mountain at a large army base. And then another high up official, the first thing he did was made sure that we were all okay and we were satisfied with how they've treated us. And I thought, well, this is not what we expected. We got sent to this room that had tiger and leopard skins hanging on the wall with the heads, you know, like something out of a film. And then they said, well, when was the last time you ate? And we said, well, we had breakfast, and that was at 8 a.m. and now it was 11 p.m. so they got the food out, and
it's a nice lovely end to the story. I'm sure there's lots of questions that I'd love to ask you more. We're sort of running out of time, but Mike, your reaction to Alex coming home, and you've only just arrived back, haven't you?
Yeah, I just got back yesterday,
yes.
Actually.
This is hot off the press. Yeah, this is
indeed,
wonderful.
Yeah.
So, Mike, your reaction was to get this straight into
it's
the...
It's great. I mean, I took the story to my editor, and I thought he'd say, well, look, you know, like... it's a bit out of our area, Mike, you know, like, but bless him, he read it and he was like, wow, you know, this is crazy, this is something else. So yeah, it's great to have the coverage in the Cambridge Independent, and you know, I'm really pleased everything sort of worked out really well for Alex. And you know, like, I mean, just in case people are thinking of sort of like, you know, going on one of these holidays, it's incredibly cheap. I mean, obviously you don't pay insurance, you know, and I mean, it sounds like there is some, you know, there's a lot of civility in Kashmir despite circumstances. You get Alex said he got a flight for £550. You know, it's £2 for a meal. The accommodation is £10 a night. He did the whole thing for under £1,000, which beats, you know, like Swiss Alps prices, I would have thought.
Well, absolutely.
You are definitely a different skier to me and to a lot of people. You are very brave, and all your colleagues as well. And as you say, you've got another adventure coming up soon as well, haven't you? Which is, do you want to tell us a little bit about that too?
Yeah. So, We've got a plan, myself and a few others, to go to this island called Jan Mayen, which is in the Arctic Circle. And there was a party from Cambridge University that went out in 1921. So we are hoping to do a centenary repeat of that trip, and looking into getting out there to climb the most northerly volcano, which is called Beerenberg. And we are looking to get this off the ground from now onwards, really, to do various expeditions before then with that as our main aim. And we're all based in the Cambridge area. So we'll be looking for logistical help, various sponsorships, the information, and just to have a support behind us to try and get this off the ground and happening.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you here. I might just tell everyone here that you've only been skiing for 10 years, but in that time, I think you've done quite a lot. You are a Cambridge-based carpenter, so you have two different experiences there, but both very valid and very important. And I'm really chuffed that you came in today. Thank you, Mike, as well.
You're very welcome. He's a very good carpenter, by the way.
I know. Yes, I have been heard as well. So fantastic. And it's people like you are very inspirational. So well done indeed.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's the best thing that I could hear.
Oh, well done you, and good luck for all your future events.
Thank you.
I think we're going to have some travel news now.